The following podcast contains language that is not suitable for everybody.
This week on Super Skull, two dudes,
three mics, and a ton of enthusiasm.
Alrighty, welcome to Super Skull, your weekly new comic day audio digest from Vault to Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996. My name is Nick Wybar, and I'm here with
Marcus Schwimmer.
Hey.
Woo!
Woo! And no one else.
No, Curtis is out for the count.
This is a rare two-man podcast.
It's either going to be great,
or it's going to be the worst.
Or it's going to be the worst. I'm thinking great, though. My energy level is 300% right now.
That's, we're going to need it.
Yep.
We are going to need to, you need to be Marcus and Curtis today, because I can only be this dude right here.
Well, the question is, who's hosting? My thought is, two hosts center, one host leaves.
I think it's a split right down
the
middle.
Let's do it.
It's ready. It's a total dual host-a-thon.
So, Nick, what happened to Curtis?
So we did, I was in Grand Rapids over the weekend, and Curtis came up to join me. We finished. This is really exciting. Everybody prepare yourself. Scoot to the edge of your seat. We've been doing inventory for the past several weeks.
It's a blast.
I'm really happy to say that it's done.
Yeah, if listeners, if you've never done inventory at a retail setting before, I've done it for a couple different companies now.
Yeah.
It is the most mind-numbing.
It's horrible.
It's the worst part of working retail.
But this is also a comic shop. There's so many comics.
And they all got to get accounted for.
They've all got to get accounted for.
Every single one.
And we have so much crap in these comic shops. It's insane.
So the cool thing about doing inventory is that you start to see some of the stuff that maybe you've collected for too long.
That's really true. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're like, eh, maybe this could go.
Also, my favorite part of inventory for realsies is you get to see all those comic books that you completely forgot about.
Totally.
There's this book, Undying Love, which I forget about every year until I do inventory. It's this really sweet vampire book from Image Comics that came out a few years ago. It is so cool.
Yeah.
Undying Love. I completely forgot about it until we were doing inventory.
I love it.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of team building that goes on during inventory because you're all in it. You're in it together.
We're in it together. We're there until really, really late.
Yeah.
It's intense. It's an experience. Every year, I'm a little fried right now. I'm gonna be honest with you.
Sure.
I got home at 5 o'clock in the morning, and it was intense.
But you're feeling good.
I'm feeling good. My spirit is strong.
But old man Sullivan.
The brain's mushy, but old man Sullivan.
Yeah.
Couldn't hack it.
Couldn't hack it.
Couldn't cut it. He caught con crud.
What is con crud? That sounds nasty.
The other reason I was in Grand Rapids this weekend is because we did. It was the Grand Rapids Comic Con was going on.
Yeah, and that's a pretty big deal.
It's a pretty big deal. It's in DeVos Place. Lots and lots of people. I don't know if we have a final report on how many people attended the con. The initial reports were something like 30,000 people were going to show up. 30,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
That's 30,000 diseases.
Ooh, it's like a pandemic, but worse.
Yeah, it was anyway, it was a good show. Everything went well. The Vault of Midnight Grand Rapids staff was all like manning the show. Everybody was great talking to people. We had these little paper airplanes.
Yeah.
That had Vault of Midnight written on them. We were throwing paper airplanes.
How'd the custodial staff feel about that?
So, but the report is that it was probably pretty annoying to the people around us.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I'm really glad that it happened. But con crud, have you ever heard this term?
No, I remember hearing a couple years ago at PAX, which is a big video game convention.
Yeah.
That like SARS was like a legitimate thing. No, I'm serious. Like,
I believe it.
Will Wheaton got SARS.
Yeah. It's just too many people.
Yeah,
you're in contact with too many people.
Right.
So a bunch of the staff by the end of the weekend, because they were working that booth. I was at the shop. I was having a great time. But a bunch of the staff came back by Sunday night, and they were like looking pretty hit.
Yeah.
I was pretty worried about
it. And then they gave it to Curtis, and thus Curtis isn't here today.
And thus Curtis, he didn't get enough sleep, and he got con sickness.
He's a little sicky sick.
Yeah.
So
he wimped out.
That being said, Curtis, we wish you the best in a fast and speedy recovery.
I think you just need to get back to work. That's the best cure for...
What if... Yeah, maybe he's just watching Mad Max over and over and over again. Joke's on us.
Oh, classic.
Classic Sullivan.
Yeah.
All righty.
Well, so in... Had a little bit of news this week.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of kerfuffle.
little bit of kerfuffle.
A little bit of kerfuffle over Captain America.
I am so excited to do this segment. You have no idea. This is what my podcasting dreams are made of.
Well, let's... So, over the week, you know, we talked about Captain America, Sam Wilson, Captain America.
My pick last week.
That was your pick last week?
My big pick, yeah.
Was that last week that book came out?
I think so, yeah.
I am losing my mind from inventory madness.
Yeah, it was last week. So, because I'm in love.
Yeah.
With Red Wing, his new, not new, but his sidekick bird.
Oh, the Falcon.
The Falcon.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's keeping part of his Falconness, and that's his sidekick Red Wing, who, and I'm going to call it now, I don't want to call it an effect,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to say that animal sidekicks are going to have a little bit of a resurgence.
Yeah?
Starting with my man Red Wing.
This sounds like some patented Marcus Schwimmer bullshit.
Well, part of it's, you know, I'm a Michigan boy, so like Red, you know, you grew up with that Red Wing culture. His name is Red Wing, but also he's a Falcon that has like a cybernetic mask on.
Is that where the Detroit Red Wings comes from? Does it come from a Falcon?
It comes from the Falcon sidekick, Red Wing.
I didn't know that.
Now you know.
What does that have to do with ice and skating around?
I have no idea where that team's name or I'm sure there's one listener in particular who I know is listening to this right now and is just like, that is not correct. So, yeah. Yeah.
At any rate, we were talking about Sam Wilson, Captain America.
Great book.
And his sidekick.
Red Wing.
I miss Curtis already.
Why?
I feel like, where's our anchor? We need him to pull us back together with a pun or something.
Yeah, sorry. I got nothing for you.
He'd be really excited about this next thing that we're going to talk about. So Captain America came out. We talked about it a little bit. Captain America's kind of going in a different direction.
For sure.
His new thing, if you want to call it that, is that he is not going to stay quiet on social issues anymore.
No, he's not a man of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Nope.
He's not a man of the Avengers. He's himself, and he's out there fighting for the American people.
Yeah. He's privatized a little bit. He's a private citizen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he is speaking his mind, and what he's choosing to speak his mind, it turns out he's a pretty progressive fella.
For sure.
Or like a left-leaning fella.
Well, yeah, but the thing is like Sam, he's left-leaning in far as his social views, but like if you know anything about this character, he's always been outspoken. His character's always been way more outspoken than Steve Rogers. But like at the same time, he's definitely more left-leaning on the social issues, but he's also a military man.
Right.
He's more likely to really get up there and get dirty than maybe Steve Rogers. He's not the clean, pretty boy image that Steve Rogers has. But over the weekend, this book came out, and our fellow news distributors...
Yeah, our colleagues over at Fox and Friends.
Yeah, Fox and Friends.
Yeah, friends of the show.
Friends of the show decided that they had some issues.
Well, a lot of people did. A lot of conservative news outlets took issue with specifically Sam Wilson's his enemy in that issue, who was the Supreme Serpent.
The Supreme Serpent.
Now, the Supreme Serpent is basically a Minuteman. You remember these guys from a few years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
They post up on the border, waiting for illegals.
Yep.
To cross over the border.
Yep. And this was a really big thing because like they kind of started there, and then they ended up like the government was trying to tax landowners, and landowners were like, "No, we're not paying these taxes." And then the Minutemen would show up with their guns.
Yeah.
And there was like, "Are they gonna fight the police?" Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
These are the people that Sam Wilson's new...
So this is like, the Supreme Serpent is a cartoon amped up version of that. He's like a giant muscled up dude with a mask on and an army of Klansmen with rifles.
Yeah, they kind of look like Cobra Commanders from G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
But they're a little bit more fatigued out.
Right. So a lot of people took issue with this, that Captain America's new enemy is conservatism.
Yeah. Well, Nick, let's hear what our friends at Fox and Friends have to say about it.
Let's have a listen.
All right, we have news from the comic book world, and we're going to let the expert on this subject take it away. Clayton, what's going on?
Well, you know, comic books have been struggling over the past few years, Tucker, because more and more Americans are going to see movies. They're going to Marvel movies, of course, to see the Avengers, and so comic books have been struggling to get readership, and here you have Marvel doing a little bit of a PR stunt. In fact, they've made Sam Wilson, who is formerly the Falcon, he's an African-American, he's taking over as Captain America now, but he's got a new odd enemy.
So we're just gonna stop it right there for just a second. That to point out that comic books are struggling their comic books are having a really hard time. They're having apparently.
Nick, why don't you tell me how hard of a time comic books are having?
Well, he's got his finger on the pulse since 2010. Comic book sales have risen from 660 million up to 835 million.
They're struggling.
People are anticipating probably a $1 billion industry this year. That's like not out of the question at all.
Right, and these movies are really hurting the industry.
Yeah, because people are going to movies and not reading books anymore, so you got to try some parlor tricks to get people to buy your comics again.
Right.
And so Marvel is just, this is just another way to grab new readers.
That's right. Sam Wilson's career as a comic book character hasn't perfectly been built up for him to take over the mantle of Captain America.
Yeah.
No, that's not it. Marvel has decided that they need an African American in the mix, so they're going to make Captain America African American.
Yeah.
This
is another liberal pander.
It's another liberal. This is the most ridiculous.
I love it so much.
I do.
So it's wrong in the face of it, you know, and we're going to keep listening to this because it gets even a little bit better. But this is not something that they did last week. Sam Wilson, All New Captain America, came out in November of 2014.
And
it was building long before that.
Months, 6 months before that, we've been building up to Sam Wilson taking over Captain America. And this is, I mean, he's in the movies. He's represented in the movies. Not his Cap yet.
Yeah.
But it's not like they're just pulling him out of nowhere. Like, he's a character really deeply rooted in the Marvel Universe.
Absolutely.
But this expert disagrees with us.
Well, yeah, the comic book expert.
That's right.
Let's see what else they have to say.
Instead of going against Hydra and the typical Captain America villains, he's going up against conservatives. That's his new enemy.
His new enemy is all conservatives.
Every single one.
And here's a quote from the book of the series. Attention, all trespassers. I am the supreme serpent. By invading this sovereign land, you defy the laws of God, nature, and the United States Constitution. Therefore, I hereby apprehend you by the power vested in me by the aforementioned God, nature, etc., etc.
So who is this serpent? Is this serpent an Islamic extremism, an ISIS member bent on destroying Western civilization? No. The serpent is an American who has misgivings about unlimited illegal immigration and the costs associated with it.
Right.
And that, according to the comic book, is evil.
Right. So these serpents are stopping people from coming over the border. And Captain America is saying, that's not going to happen on my watch. I'm Captain America. Here's what the comic book goes on to say. Oh, I believe you, sir. I can see you have enough trouble with you already. Trouble and disease and crime weigh heavy on your backs.
I don't think there's much more to say
about
this.
Fox and Friends has taken a villain.
Yeah.
And tried to make him, this is a comic book villain. They're ridiculous in nature.
Yep.
Right. He's just misguided about the costs. It's all about the costs.
I mean, so she goes on to say that, I think Marvel, what they really need to do is come up with a comic that, from the perspective of the men and women who keep us safe.
That's
on
right.
On our borders.
They should do a comic book on the opposite with the people who are working the border to keep us safe.
That's right. Because there's no comic book in the history of the industry that focuses on the men and women who keep this country safe.
So it was just kind of interesting, only because I just love it when it just to try to talk about comic books at all.
Well, and just don't. The expert's like, I miss the days when Captain America used to punch Hitler in the face.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So it was a little bit of a dust up over the week. This wasn't the only outlet, Fox and Friends, that got into it. The Washington Times was writing about it. People are pissed. People are
Sam
pissed
Wilson,
about the new Captain America.
Keep doing what you're doing, my man.
Yeah, I was lukewarm on that comic. Remember, I was not that into it. I'm not into it now, but I mean, this is... So Nick Spencer had some pretty good responses to it, and he wrote, he's just amazed, quote, how certain media coverage of Sam Wilson Captain America directly mirrors what they showed in the book.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the whole book is about the media reaction to Sam Wilson, and now we have it. It's happening in
it's
real
so
life.
Perfect.
Yeah. So,
Jesus Christ.
Comic Book Resources has has a pretty good article about it. We'll link to it in the show notes. Goofy stuff. It is not fake. Idiocracy is real. We live in it right now.
The idea that you could come on and be like, well, comic books are really hurting right now, when anyone who has the smallest connection to the industry.
Well, you just have to do a quick fucking Google search. On that one, my man, you don't even need to be super tied into this shit. You just need to it took me 10 seconds to prove that that was objectively false that comic books are hurting for sales right now.
Yeah.
That's just, and that's that was your opening.
Fox, we're here for you. If you want to pay comic book experts.
That being said, I'd love to be a guest on your program. I think I'd be a great addition to the Fox and Friends couch.
We're here for you.
I think I would fit right in.
We look good in suits.
Look great in a suit.
We can dress up.
That's right.
We'll be your comic book experts. We might even throw some facts in there.
I'll lie for you, too.
Oh, well.
I'll pander.
Yeah.
I'll say whatever you want me to say, Fox and Friends.
God, what a fucking joke. God damn it.
Well, that's enough of that nonsense. You want to talk about some comics?
Yeah.
Let's get into our big picks.
Let's do it.
Every week, we pick some comics. Marcus, what was your pick this week?
My pick this week is Karnak, number one from Marvel Comics. The art is done by Gerardo. I can't say his name.
You can. I believe in you. Just run at it full speed.
Gerardo Zaffino.
I think
is how you say it.
I think that's close enough for government work.
This hurts a little bit, but it actually doesn't because it's a great book. It's written by Warren Ellis, the guy I shit on all the time.
You shit on him all the time.
He is my poster boy for has-beens. Warren Ellis. Him and Alan Moore are my poster boys for has-beens.
Wow. Yeah.
What's the last Alan Moore?
You're just calling him out as a has-been?
I mean, I thought before today, that was the category I would put him in.
Wow.
I mean, planetary since planetary.
That's just a bold statement that publishes on... You are a bold guy.
I'm a bold guy.
So, but here you are.
Here I am, loving Karnak, number one. Here's why I love Karnak.
You talked... So before we go too much... Before Sight Unseen, you just saw that there was a new Warren Ellis book coming out, and you talked so much shit.
Yeah, I believe I picked it up and said, oh, look at this giant pile of horse shit.
Yeah.
Is my verbatim phrase.
Sight Unseen.
And I'm wrong. I'm totally wrong. It's not a giant pile of horseshit. It's great. So I am very linked to this Inhumans movement that is happening in Marvel right now, and I'm loving it.
Yeah.
Marvel's putting a ton of resources behind Inhumans.
What can you tell us about Karnak?
Karnak is a monk, is the D&D class, I guess I would best put him in. And he's part of this Temple of Wisdom. And they go around, and when people are getting used to or there's weird things happening with the transformation into being an Inhuman, he kind of comes in and figures it out and teaches them the way of being an Inhuman, essentially. Yeah. This book is dope. So my man, Agent Phil Coulson from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., calls up Karnak. And is like, hey, we got one. We can't quite figure it out. You want to come lend us a hand?
Because there's this, something is turning people into Inhumans.
Right. Well, so Black Bolt
has
released the Terrigen Mist.
Yeah, the Terrigen?
Terrigen, thank you. And it's turning humans who have this inhuman gene, it's releasing their powers, sometimes in very crazy ways.
Yeah.
So a kid, this starts to happen, things are normal, he just like loses his peanut allergy, and then someone comes and nabs him.
Yeah.
And S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't really have the resources to go get him. So they call in Karnak. Karnak is the super fly monk who just is no bullshit.
He's like a huge dick.
He's a huge dick, but it's all rooted in this, like, I'm right, you're wrong. I've been doing this for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
So why don't you just listen and let me do my job? He's no nonsense, which is great. And the fighting in this book is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he says these things. He just has these really great sage-like phrases, but he also kind of looks homeless at the same time.
Because he's just a poor penniless monk.
The character's super interesting. Warren Ellis has me hooked. First issue. I'm like, claws in.
I can't believe it.
I know, me too. I'm so shocked, but I'm so pleased.
Yeah.
Like, Warren Ellis can write. It would be silly for anyone to make the statement like, oh, Warren Ellis can't write comic books. I just, for the last couple of years, have thought that his stuff hasn't really been up my table. But Karnak is so dope.
Hasn't been up your table.
Hasn't been up my table. That makes no sense. That makes no sense. Hasn't been my flavor.
It has not been your flavor.
But I love this kind of archetype,
the
traveling monk, the silent monk.
What I find interesting about this is that it really is very Warren Ellis-y.
Yeah.
It really is like playing into his thing of like he loves to open with an interrogation between two people that know a lot, but one knows a little bit more.
That's his jam.
He opens a lot of books that way.
Yeah.
And I think it works most of the time in the Warren Ellis way. I've been reading his stuff a long time. You and I have disagreed about Warren Ellis many, many times. And I agree with you that he's not been the strongest recently. That Moon Knight run was pretty cool, though.
That Moon Knight run was pretty great.
Yep.
But what makes this book particularly good is Karnak and Agent Coulson are two very different people.
Yeah.
With very similar goals.
Mm-hmm.
And their conversations back and forth are wonderful. Really well-written stuff.
Yeah.
I am in deep love with this book. So the martial arts comic isn't something that's being done as much anymore. It had a real moment in the 70s. And we're just starting to see it come back with things like Master of Kung Fu from Secret Wars.
Yeah.
But this is a wonderful Kung Fu book. I mean, Karnak, his fighting style is rooted kind of in this traditional monk-like.
I didn't really see it as a Kung Fu book, but now that you mention it, I'm starting to get there.
Yeah, especially with the hand wraps that like kind of kick out and can whip people for him. It's great.
And he's a monk.
He's a monk.
And he's punching.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's kicking.
Yeah. But there's also, like, if you're following the greater Inhuman storyline, this ties right in and is a really interesting subsect of the Inhuman culture that we haven't really seen before.
So Inhumans are, I'm glad you brought that up, Margus.
Well, thank you.
On our two-man podcast. Because very soon we're going to be able to hear the history of the Inhumans from Jeff and Charlie and friends.
Oh, that's great.
Out of the Grand Rapids shop, Vault of Midnight Grand Rapids. They're going to break down a whole comprehensive history of the Inhumans with like crucial stuff to read and big moments in their history. They've been around a really long time. They're pretty cool.
They're really cool. Jack Kirby. This is like great Jack Kirby stuff right here.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of things have changed and there's been characters who have come and gone. But Inhumans are here to stay. They're working on a movie.
They're about to be bigger. They're about to be a bigger part of the comics and the movies.
And if you're watching any Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., this makes so much sense. It ties right
a lot of Inhumans and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
This whole season is all about Inhumans.
Oh, that's crazy.
This is a great book. I apologize. I don't. I stick by my statement that a lot of Warren Ellis stuff recently has been doo-doo. But this shows his writing chops. Go read Trees, bro. Go read Trees.
All right.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you Trees.
Thanks. We're meeting in the middle.
But maybe his company stuff is where it's at.
That's what I'm saying. When this dude writes traditional superheroes, Moon Knight was great.
Blue Rose was great.
No,
for a few
it was
issues.
Not.
For
no.
For three issues.
For three issues, it was a... Yeah. Karnak, check it out. Great book.
Karnak, number one, Marvel Comics.
Yeah. And you don't need to know shit about the Inhumans to get into this book.
You really don't.
If you don't know anything about these dudes, it's just a great monk tale. And there's something to be said about that.
You know what my favorite part of this book is?
What?
When he answers the phone, here you be the phone ringing.
Ring, ring, ring.
I am Karnak. That's how he answers the phone.
Yeah.
That's how I'm going to answer my phone for a while.
Karnak doesn't have any time for bullshit.
Yeah.
He's a man on a mission, and he's like totally, he just gets the bigger picture. Like he's talking to his fellow monks about like stones for two pages.
He's giving them like some beats to hit while he's gone. Like, I'm going to be gone. I'm going to need you to meditate on rocks and like the nature of rocks. And like these rocks are much more important than you. And clean the shitters while I'm gone, and then he's out of there.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a great book. I highly recommend it. It's a ton of fun.
Recommending Warren Ellis.
Warren Ellis. I know. It's a brave new world.
It's really, really good. Have you read Fell?
No.
From Warren Ellis?
No, I have not.
It's a Ben Temple Smith, Warren Ellis book.
Okay.
And the whole thing is done in 9-panel structure.
Yeah.
So every page is 3x3 grid.
Oh, interesting.
And so they're playing off of that format. So sometimes they might break... they might add or like take an entire length of those three panels and do a splash page or something.
Sure.
But everything's done out of the format of that 3x3 grid. And it's like this detective noir story.
Well, I love detectives and I love noir. And
it's
I love
so
Ben Temple Smith.
Good. It'll totally change how you think about Warren Ellis.
I mean, I'll say it time and time again. The dude's got some writing chops.
Yeah.
But as of late, his Marvel stuff is where he shines. And here he is again with Karnak.
Agreed.
Nick, what do you got for us this week?
My pick this week, I had another Marvel book. I picked Agents of Atlas.
All right, so Agents of Atlas, I'm a comic dude.
Yep.
I like comics. I've been around the block for a bit. Agents of Atlas is a superhero team-up book, but it's pretty bizarre. What's up with Agents of Atlas? Like, where do they come from? How does it all work?
So Agents of Atlas is a book that I always forget about until I read one and I remember how much I love Agents of Atlas.
What do these dudes do? What makes them different from the Avengers?
So it was a limited... They're actually like a relatively newer series, but they're kind of... I don't know how to describe them except for they're kind of pulpy.
I think pulpy is a great word to describe this team.
So it's Gorilla Man, Jimmy Woo, M11, who's a robot, the Uranian... Namor,
right.
not Namor, but Namor, she Namor. She's her own lady. I'm not trying to, like, you know, I'm not trying to make her Namor's namesake.
No. She's her own lady for sure.
Yeah. And there's been some other people that have been on the team. And the rest. And so the Atlas, I'm not super well versed on them because, again, like, I just erase them from my mind. They have these, like, limited runs, and they're a ton of fun. There's, like, a giant, smart gorilla man who's always my favorite part of Agents of Atlas.
Yeah.
He's awesome. And they come in, they kick a lot of butt. It's a lot funnier and smarter than you expect it to be. And then we don't see another Agents of Atlas book for a really long time.
So here's the thing listeners may not know is, like, gorillas were a big part of comic book culture for a while. There was, like, a big gorilla movement. And we see this through Gorilla Grodd, the Flash villain.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an entire book, the name is escaping me, but it's all about gorillas in comics.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Yeah. There was, like, a real gorilla thing going on.
Gorillas in comics.
Yeah. And Gorilla Man is the perfect representation about why that works so well. He's the opposite of Grodd. I mean, they're both super hyper-intelligent gorillas.
Yeah.
But he's, like, very smart, and he's very well-dressed and kind of a classy gorilla, whereas Grodd's the opposite. But, man, that character, Gorilla Man, like, I want a book about that dude. There's no weak link on this team. Like, Mr. Marvel is a character, and he just, like, gets into your brain and messes with your brain. It's so pulpy. It's so good. They use jetpacks and ray guns, and it's the best. And my man Phil Coulson making another appearance in this book.
He's all over the place. So this was a Secret Wars book, was this Agents of Atlas.
Mm.
They're in Metropolitia. I couldn't remember the name of the city, but they're after Baron Zemo in Battle World. This is a Secret Wars book.
Yeah.
And it's just a one-shot.
That's too bad.
I know, it is too bad. Gorilla Man is cursed with this. If you kill Gorilla Man, you yourself will turn into a gorilla.
Yeah.
Which is not something I remember from any Agents of Atlas book.
It's fucking sweet.
I love that. Yeah. Anyway, it was a ton of fun, man. It's another Secret Wars. First of all, I was surprised that we're still seeing Secret Wars books. There's a couple things that are still kind of like wrapping up. But to have this number one this kind of late in the game, it was a surprise and a delight. So I guess Agents of Atlas, fucking read it or don't. Yeah. It's a comic book.
Yeah,
it's not good for you anyway. It's just a bunch of liberal pandering.
That's right.
Like, they have non-humans in this book telling humans what to do, which is, you know.
It's definitely pandering to the gorilla lobby.
Oh, it's a huge pander to Big Gorilla. All right. This is the pull box. Other comics came out. Who gives a shit?
Here we go. Oh, that was your legitimate intro to this segment.
You didn't like that?
No, I did not. Can I host?
Those are our big picks. What was your big pick this week?
My big pick was Karnak, number one by Warren Ellis.
Excellent. My big pick was Agents of Atlas, number one. It was a one-shot from Marvel Comics.
Both good picks this week. But a ton of other books came out this week, and that's why we're getting into the pull box. I'm going to kick it off. Batman and Robin Eternal.
That's what you want to kick it off with.
I love this book.
Yeah?
I like it a lot.
Okay.
I think it's great. I really like the character Dick Grayson, and I like all the other Robins, and this book, week by week, is keeping my interest.
You love Dick Grayson.
I love Dick Grayson. Yeah, you want to know why? Because he was Robin, mm-hmm. So you got to be the sidekick.
Okay.
He grew up to be his own superhero.
Yeah.
He's quite the ladies' man.
What can you tell me about him as a man?
As about
his character.
Yeah, I think Dick Grayson.
Not that he was Robin, but just about his character.
Like, as a person.
Yeah.
I think Dick Grayson is a man who never says no to a challenge.
Okay.
I think Dick Grayson.
All superheroes. Keep going.
I think Dick Grayson is a man who is willing to put his life on limb for the people who are less fortunate than himself.
Okay. So all superheroes.
Yeah.
But what about Dick Grayson? What is it about him?
Yeah.
What is it about him that makes him different from everybody else?
I think Dick Grayson is always living in the shadow of Batman. And
okay.
So he is out there trying to find out not only for himself who he is as a superhero.
Do other Robins also have that problem?
No. No. I think like Red Robin, Tim Drake.
He doesn't care.
Doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jason Todd. That dude doesn't give, he gives zero shits.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Grayson will always live in the shadow of Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
And I find that super interesting.
I found that book super dull.
Yeah.
I can
see why you wouldn't like it.
I was reading the second issue and I thought, reading Batman and Robin Eternal, flipping page by page, and I'm like, this event has got to be over soon. And then I flipped back to the cover and realized it's number two in this 6-month event,
yeah.
Weekly event.
It's going to be so good.
There's so many words in that comic.
It's a little wordy. They could cut a third of the words.
There are words to no effect.
Yeah.
I just, oh man. Yeah, I struggled with that.
Oh, I'm really digging it. I love the whole Robin gallery, and everyone's kind of getting a little piece of the pie right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cool to see how these Robins are coming together without Bruce there to kind of wrangle them all.
What's the premise of this book?
Oh, goodness. So
I'm asking because I read it and I don't know.
So Bruce is gone.
Yeah.
The Robins are being targeted, and this new character showed up. All she says is the word mother. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that she can speak. And so the Robins are kind of trying to use their different styles of detective skills to put the pieces together and find out what's going on with all these people in Gotham. Meanwhile, there's the ever-looming shadow of Jim Gordon as Batman because he's hunting all of the vigilantes Gotham.
And these Robins count
as
vigilantes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I'm digging it.
There's this scene in there where they're like in this apartment and there was a bunch of punching.
Yeah.
And they kept turning around and like, did somebody say Robin? And like another Robin would come through the window. And I feel like three or four Robins come through the window and like, hey, what are you guys doing? Y'all hanging out? It's me, Robin.
I love it. I think it's great. I totally dig it. So yeah, Batman and Robin Eternal. If you like Robin, this book's got all of them. It's really quite great. Nick, you want me to just keep going through this little list here?
Yeah, why don't you go hit me with another one?
Sure. Astonishing Ant-Man number one. Really, if you like the original Ant-Man, it just picks it up right off. It's just a new numbering. But that series was really, really great for me. Invincible Iron Man. Here's the thing. I do not dig Tony Stark. This should be a surprise to no one.
You do not.
This book is really good. It's got a very interesting Victor Von Doom in it.
I remember from the end of the last issue, we got a little Doom in there.
It's really, really awesome. I'm digging it. Iron Man's new suit, totally, totally dope.
I'm looking forward to that. Hey, you know what the best news of the whole week is?
What's that?
Weird World number 5 came out.
Man, this book is great.
Did you read this new one?
No.
I haven't either. I'm saving it for the bottom of my stack because I'm so excited about it. But it's the last issue of the Jason Aaron run.
It's going to be dope.
I cannot wait.
Amazing Spider-Man feels like a number one just came out. And it did. A few weeks ago. But number two's out. Dan Slott continuing his onslaught of great Spider-Man books.
I don't get it.
Come on. A number of Star Wars books came out today, and by a number I mean two. Star Wars Shattered Empire.
That's how I felt about Batman Eternal.
Star Wars Shattered Empire is out. This book is continuing to kill it. And Darth Vader number 11. Hey, Nick, you see that new Star Wars trailer that dropped?
I did see that new Star Wars trailer.
It only makes these comic books even sweeter.
I'm so excited about the potential of this movie.
Yeah.
We talked about it a while ago, but like I cannot wait to see another trailer for this movie.
Yeah.
Although I don't think there's any more trailers. I think we're coming up on it.
Yeah. Hey, Marvel, do a fighter pilot Star Wars comic, please.
Yeah, that could happen.
And make a ton of money.
So Darth Vader came out this week. You know what I was thinking about today?
What?
What does Darth Vader do when he's just hanging out? Does Darth Vader ever just kick it?
Nope.
He doesn't ever just like get in a beanbag chair and just like, ah.
No, I think Darth is Darth's working on making Darth more powerful all the time. You got to remember, Darth is Anakin Skywalker. Anakin Skywalker is a self-centered, whiny bitch, so that doesn't leave.
But he's also like, I just feel like maybe that's the problem. I just feel like maybe he's not taking any Darth time.
No R&R.
Yeah, he just gotta kick it for a minute.
Well, we see his like essentially quarters. In the Death Star.
Which is like a giant ball. Sphere.
Yeah, it's a giant sphere that he lives in. It's got to suck.
Maybe it's a sweet video game hangout in there.
Oh, a little Fahrenheit 450, or no, Brave New World, right? With all the TV monitors. A
little Darth Cave.
Yeah, a little Darth Cave.
He's probably got sweet like Tupac posters all over the inside of it. I'm just saying, it occurred to me today that like you never see Darth Vader in repose.
Never.
You never see him just like having a cup of coffee and just fucking chilling.
Does Darth Vader need to eat?
He's got to eat, right?
I mean, he's more machine than man, right?
Do the machines feed him?
I don't know.
Here's the thing. Somebody knows the answer to this question.
Oh, for sure. I would imagine that if Darth Vader did eat, he'd be a big Bratwurst fan.
We also saw the release of Multiversity, the deluxe edition this week, which is the entirety of Multiversity all in one volume. And you know what that means?
Time to read it.
We're going to read it soon, and then we're going to do the long-promised year-long Year of a Promise to talk about Multiversity in one shot.
That's not the only great graphic novel that came out. The best book of 2014, Wild's End, got released in trade paperback today. The series, there's a new series of Wild End that's coming out right now, and the releases kind of got mixed up. If you like comic books, read Wild's End. It's out in trade paperback right now. You can like read it and get right into the new series. It is my favorite book of 2014.
I guess you should only read it if you like feeling like happy.
Yeah.
Or if you just like enjoying yourself at all.
It's a phenomenal book.
It's really good.
Please, please, please pick it up. I know it's a weird premise, but get into it.
Some people don't want to read about talking animals.
Those people are wrong.
It turns some people off.
Yeah.
That's not you on the face of it. But for some people, they see that and they think, nope.
Yeah.
Next.
Pick it up.
I say pick it up.
You're going to love it.
We saw the Hawkeye complete omnibus come out today.
As book's bullshit.
What's that?
It's a bullshit book.
Why is it a bullshit book?
Because it's $99.99.
Yeah. It's got a lot of stuff in it.
That's horseshit.
It's got a lot of stuff in it.
It's $100 graphic novel.
It's a big, beautiful hardcover with a bunch of extra material. Nope. And it's oversized, Marcus.
It's not worth $100.
It might be worth $100.
How much are those big Sandman books? $199?
The big omnibus?
Yeah, of the Sandman. They're all black paged and leather bound.
$150 to $200 bucks.
Okay, so let's say they're $200.
Yeah.
Right. Let's say they're double that price.
Yeah.
Those books are ridiculously expensive and they are actually dope looking.
Yeah.
This looks like every other hardbound Marvel graphic novel ever, and it's $100. It's total horseshit.
I think it looks cool.
You know how much the Multiversity book is?
$50.
$50, almost the same size.
Well, it's more comic in the Hawkeye thing though.
It's pretty close. It's
you're right.
Not
it, is, it is pretty close. Okay. You're right.
There I'll we go. Give, I just that. We got Marvel's doing a lot of great stuff. You got to call them out when they do bullshit like that, like try to release $100 hardcover.
I didn't think about that, but you're right. It is. It's kind of bullshit.
It's kind of bullshit.
Yeah. You really turned me around on that one, buddy. Lumberjanes number 19 came out today, right
Carolyn.
In the middle of a Carolyn Nowak
yep.
run.
Yep.
That's
She's great.
Pretty excellent.
She's great.
What else do we have here? Oh, Tokyo Ghost.
Yeah, did you read this issue this week?
I haven't read it yet. This is Sean Murphy, and help me out.
Rick Remender.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to it.
There's two covers for this book. One is a really dope cover with a samurai sword on it.
Is that the cover of the week?
It might be.
That's a really good cover. That's Talk to me about what's going on this cover.
So we have, it's a mostly black matte cover. And there's a bonsai tree with a samurai sword sticking up. And in the background, you see two children playing in this like futuristic city. But in front of them is this samurai bonsai combo. It's just really, really powerful. So this is a great cover.
Mm-hmm.
The other cover for this book, totally opposite reaction. It's like a girl jumping around in skimpy clothes and is just not very cool. But that being said, Murphy's art since Chrononauts has really won me over. He's up there for me.
He is a phenomenal artist.
I agree.
He's very distinct and good at his job.
I agree.
That's a really good cover.
That's a really good cover.
It's got the Sean Murphy thing. Sean Murphy is not afraid to put something really complex in the background and something very simple and iconic in the foreground. That he'll build a whole page of narrative in the same way, like not just covers.
Yeah, you're a little biased though. You got a samurai thing.
I do got a samurai thing.
Yeah.
I do have when I was a younger man, I had a big old samurai. And a big old samurai sword.
Did you? You owed a samurai sword?
I did.
Did you buy it at Comic-Con?
I bought it on eBay. And I brought it to a local knife cutlery establishment.
You got them to sharpen it.
They refused.
Oh, smart.
In point of fact, they were like, no, get out.
That's awesome.
There's no chance. And I carried my samurai sword out of there in both hands, looking real dumb, feeling real dumb.
Do you still owe the samurai sword?
No, it's long gone. I wish I still had it.
Oh, that's too bad. We could,
as far as you know.
We chop watermelons with it or something.
It wasn't too good. It wasn't very good for chopping.
Well, those are that's our pull box.
That's our pull box.
That's what else is coming
Marcus,
out this week.
I'm not going to lie to you right now.
What's up?
I'm fading.
We're here.
I'm fading fast. Curtis isn't here.
Yeah.
That's throwing me off. I was up until 5 o'clock in the morning the other night. I'm not a young man anymore. I can't stay up that late. It affects me for months at a time. This whole fiscal quarter is fucked for me now because I stayed up that late one time.
I'm going to buy a samurai sword. It's going to turn it all around.
I'm going to... Is why? Okay. That's what's going to do it for me.
Yep.
I'm going to have a samurai sword.
Alrighty. Well,
coffee.
Ton of good books coming out. Ton of good books. So make sure to check them out. Please. Wild's End. Please.
Yeah. Should we move on to the board game corner?
Let's do it.
Like, can we just like lie down in the board game corner? Can we both just like...
Let's imagine that there are beanbag chairs in the board game corner.
Can we... Just slide into like a Darth Vader like repose, like our heads on our hand, on the elbow.
Yeah,
can you see it?
I can see it.
And I'm splayed out, Oh, hey there. Welcome to the Board Game Corner.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, let's set this board game up on the floor.
Actually, with this game, you can. So this week, we are reviewing Tides of Time.
Yeah. How was it?
Well, you played it with me, so I think it's a great game. It's a little $12 two-player card game.
Yes.
It has no new mechanics. It's borrowing mechanics from a ton of different games.
That's not how you want to start out your review,
no,
my man.
Why? No, but I'm getting there.
Yeah. Let me hear it. Let me critique your review mid-review.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. It's a great little two-player game, $12.99. It's a game that borrows a mechanic from another one of my favorite card games called Sushi Go, where you're trying to create sets or combos to give you points, but you're passing your hand back and forth with the other person. So you're trying to remember what's in your hand, what's in the hand you just passed. You're trying to make combos, and you're also trying to block the other person from making combos.
You're thinking about what you're going to play, and you're thinking about what you're going to hand your opponent.
Absolutely.
This is Sushi Go borrowed this from Seven Wonders.
Yep.
Seven Wonders borrowed this from any game where you ever draft.
Yep, essentially.
It's a drafting thing.
It's absolutely a drafting game. What I really like about this game is I taught you this game in 5 minutes.
Yes.
We had learned and played the game in under 30, and I would like to play it again because I think there's some strategy I missed.
Yeah.
It has this thing where each round you can bank a card for the next round.
And what is it ostensibly? The theme is that you're building a kingdom?
The idea is that you are building a civilization.
Yeah.
And as these civilizations crumble via the rounds, you can save certain aspects of them.
Ah, that's the time aspect.
That's the time aspect, okay. Yeah. I think for $12, there's a lot of bang in this box.
Yeah.
I think it's a great... I always get people like, oh, I played every two-player game ever. New two-player game, fits in your backpack. It's great.
Pretty solid, simple. Learn it very, very easily.
Yeah.
And it does things that other games have done, but it's doing it all well. It doesn't seem, you know, it's not broken. It's not, it doesn't seem, I didn't run out of ideas or strategy while I was playing it.
No, if anything, there's only 16 cards in this whole game.
Yeah.
But as I was playing it, I was just thinking like, oh, I would see you play a card, be like, oh, this would combo really well with this. Maybe next time I'll try to do that.
And it's a game, there's so few cards in the deck that it actually does lend itself to, like, you could game it out and figure out on every turn, in theory, like, the odds of what's coming up. Like, here's what's in my hand. I saw my opponent's hand a second ago. Like, I can do an optimal turn right now. That's cool and not cool. That's a great critique gave there.
That's really good.
Oh, my goodness.
It's cool, but not cool. Tell me why.
Because it works in the sense that, like, the mechanics are sound.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work in that if I could see it running out of steam before too many plays.
Yeah, for me, this game is the game I'm going to use when there's only one other person to play with and I don't have a ton of time.
Yeah.
And it's going to be my intro game to people who aren't into gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a new bar game that I can put
pretty
in the mix with
game.
Sushi Go and Hive and all that other stuff.
I liked it. I thought it was pretty clever.
The art is great, eh?
Art's great. You whooped my ass pretty thoroughly.
I had played a couple rounds before I played you.
Yeah. I had Rachel Polk yelling in my ear, too, while I was trying to play it. She's like, do that, don't do that.
Is that your Rachel Polk voice?
No, don't do that.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. Yeah.
My name is Rachel Polk.
Yeah, I'm going to give this game 4 out of 5 civilization artifacts.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That was the Board Game Corner.
$12.99. I love seeing that there are games for $12.99, to be honest. That's the other part of it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a heck of a game for that price point. Give it as a gift. You know.
And it's a full game. $12.99.
It's a full game. $12.99.
Yeah. Those two-player games are hard to come by, is the other thing. So that's the Board Game Corner, Tides of Time.
Check it out.
I say check it out. I agree. Should we move on to the citizen's question?
Let's do it.
The citizen's question. Our citizen question this week comes from Travis, who writes, not infrequently, I see news stories about long-established, often venerated comic shops closing after decades of operation because, quote, business is bad. What's going on here? From my perspective, it seems like business is great for Vault of Midnight. Can you speculate as to why some stores seem to be booming at the same time that others bust? Are there trade secrets you found to keep your stores successful? Well, we're not going to give away the trade secrets, obviously. Oh, I wish we had any secrets at all.
So here's the thing about Vault of Midnight. We're piecing it together every day. Every day we're figuring it out more and more.
True to a point.
You know,
true to a point.
We have some good practices.
Yeah.
And we have some guidelines that we've talked about before on the show.
Yeah.
But the market, like the industry, is changing pretty rapidly right now.
Yes.
If you think like these big blockbusters weren't a thing 5 or 10 years ago.
Big blockbuster movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've played a huge role in the market. So comics are changing. Digital comics are a thing now.
Mm-hmm.
We're all trying to adapt. But I think there are some points that we can hit here. I, too, hear about comic shops that are going out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to come at this question from the perspective as someone who worked for Borders Books and Music as they were going out of business.
So you were part of a business that was actively going bust.
A book business.
While it was happening.
While it was happening. Yeah. I was like right in Borders while it was going on. The comic book shop is changing in the way that, and it is adapting in a way that Borders never could. You can either have a really successful business,
mm-hmm.
or you can have a hangout spot.
Yeah.
And it's a fine balance between the two. A lot of the shops that I personally see that are going out of business are kind of this remnant of there's chairs everywhere and you can hang out and maybe you talk to the shop employee if he knows you well enough. Maybe he totally ignores you if you're not part of the club,
mm-hmm.
quotation marks. And Borders had a hard time with this. There was so much seating at Borders that people would just sit.
You could live at Borders for weeks.
You could. And just read and get refillable dime coffee.
Absolutely.
And never buy a thing except for that first coffee cup.
Yeah.
I think what Vault does, you will notice in Vault of Midnights, both,
mm-hmm.
no chairs.
That's true, and we catch flack for that.
People
do complain about it.
Yeah, because what chairs equal, free reading.
Well, and it's only weird to have this. So this is, we're not saying that this is the secret behind comic shops
chairs that
go out of business and that stay in business, by the way. This is not like the whole thing. But it does speak to the larger idea of, do you want to have a hangout or do you want to have a place that thrives and can introduce comics to people? You know, do you want to have a business or do you want to have a clubhouse?
Yeah.
And I think ideally there's a middle ground in between the two that errs on the side of, we want to have a really cool business so that we can give comics to as many people as possible,
right?
So the chair thing is you can read a whole comic in half an hour.
Easy.
A graphic novel, I mean. A single issue comic, depending on the comic.
5 minutes.
Crush it in 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
So you can do some damage in a comic shop if you can like post up in a chair and just read stuff.
Yeah.
And that's bad. That's bad for business.
It is bad for business. And the other part of it too is like I say this all the time, that at Vault, we don't sell comics, we sell culture. And I stand behind that.
You do say that.
I do say it, and I think it's a noteworthy phrase, if I may pat myself on the back.
Yeah.
But I think the days of like just being a comic shop or just being a card shop are over. Our nerd culture is morphing into one big family, where in the 80s it was very separated. And now there's no reason your shop can't accommodate all of that.
I agree. I really want to get Curtis's take on this
when
he comes back, because he's been in the trenches longer than we have.
For sure.
Lord knows, much, much longer than we have.
Oh, he's
been, because he's been alive for just a very, very long time. But I don't want to shit on comic shops that are going out of business. That breaks my heart when comic shops go out of business.
Everyone at this podcast, and if you're smart about the industry, you want every comic shop to thrive.
Yeah.
Because the more people get into comics, the more people are going to walk through your
door. There's room for so many more comic shops in the world. There's room for exponentially more comic shops than we currently have. But the ones, I think that there's something to the idea that, people open up comic shops and retail businesses for all sorts of reasons. You know, there's all sorts of, and are you doing it for you? And are you doing it because you want to have a place that is, that you have access to all of these comics and your friends have access to all these comics? Or are you trying to build something for the entire world?
Yeah.
So there's philosophical reasons why I think the latter is cooler, but it's also like there's a lot more money if you try to sell comics to everybody and not just the very narrow slice of people that have been reading comics for a really long time. And I love those folks. I am one of those people. And I have been for, my whole life pretty much. But that is such a small segment of the world. And I don't think it's financially viable anymore.
No,
you gotta aim for everybody.
You have to create an atmosphere in your shop where anyone can walk in and feel comfortable.
Absolutely. And some shops are getting really good at doing that.
Yeah.
And some shops are switching gears or they're opening up and figuring out how to do that right away. And some shops don't. And I'm not I'm not an expert in the field of closing comic shops, but I do think that has a lot to do with it.
Absolutely.
Like, it's, you got to make people feel welcome when they come into one of these places. And that's not just about, it's about how you present the place. It's about how clean it is. It's about how you interact with them right off the bat. I think it's really, really important. And I think it's something the industry needs to do better at.
Yeah. And especially with comics, like a lot of people who come in, and we see this all the time, they're nervous.
Yeah.
Because there's these pre-created conceptions about what a comic shop looks like. Thanks, Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, thanks, Big Bang Theory.
But you want to be welcoming, and sadly, some comic shops haven't figured that out yet.
I know. There's a lot of people that come in and will just say, like, you know, my experience with comic shops makes me not want to read comics.
Totally.
You know, that they've been scared off because of experiences they've had, and it's a huge bummer. So I don't want to, like, I'm not saying that, you know, comic shops go out of business for all sorts of reasons. There's a million reasons why it happens. And it's not just because some of them are great shops that go out of business, and hard times come in lots of different forms. And I don't know exactly, we have some things that you know, because we're doing fine, you know, our comic shop's doing fine. And I think that there are, the reasons that we do that is, like, one, we work really hard and we really give a shit. And two, I think that we're really aiming for the super nerds and the everybody else in equal measure.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anything we're doing, but it's not a secret.
No, we're here to tell people.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, and also, like, we're down to rap about this whenever you want.
Absolutely,
we love talking comic shop business.
We do love talking comic shop business.
It's a really exciting field to be in right now. As someone who saw the fall of the bookstore, the giant mega box bookstore.
Yeah.
I think retail as a whole is changing a lot right now. And
it is. You have to be special now. You cannot just open your doors and then be pissed when nobody comes in.
Yep.
You can get anything you want on the internet instantly. Cheaper and with free shipping.
Yep.
And it'll be at your house tomorrow. Like, you have to create an experience. People have to walk in and think, holy shit. Like, that's where we're at with brick and mortar retail.
Absolutely.
Anything less than that, and you're in trouble. Unless, you know, you have something magically that you can't get online.
Which doesn't exist.
Which is, like, and if it doesn't exist yet, it's going to be online soon.
Yeah.
So, and that's how it is with comics. You can get all this shit digitally. You can get it all online. You have to make something that's cool and that people want to be a part of.
Good talk.
That's enough of my high horse. Is there anything else you want to touch on? Let's do a live navel-gazing review of our two-man podcast.
Okay.
Let's do it, Ryan. How do you think it went? I spilled coffee on myself twice.
You did. There's still some coffee on your chin at this
God
very moment.
God damn it. Why didn't you say anything?
Well, because we're podcasting, I felt a little weird about it. The audience can't see.
Take it?
Yeah. It's all gone now. I would say we did fine.
Yeah?
Yeah. We had some technical difficulties today.
The listener won't know this.
Well, now they do.
But now they do.
We had some technical difficulties.
We had so many technical difficulties
but
today.
It's not an excuse. I think we brought our A game.
Really, really tried.
I think we can walk away proud.
Yeah?
Yeah. Much like Sam, the new Captain America, I think we can walk away proud.
Well, I think that regardless, mm-hmm. we somehow wagged our mouths for an hour, and we're going to call that a win.
We're going to call that a win.
Yeah.
As always, listeners, if you have any questions or anything you'd like us to answer, we'd love to hear it.
We'd love to hear from you. That's Superskull at vaultofmidnight.com. Marcus, you want to hit us with some credits?
You bet. Thus ends another issue of Superskull, the Vault of Midnight podcast. You can hear us every Thursday wherever podcasts are found. Our music was created by the Atomic A-Bomb. Our logo was designed by the Image Wizard, Philip Wong. Our producer is the amazingly patient Rachel Polk. Make sure that you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Superskull Show is our handle. Check out our website, www.superskullshow.com, and send us questions that we will answer with gusto.
Leave us a review on iTunes.
Superskull is brought to you by Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff since 1996. This is Marcus Schwimmer for Nick Weibar, wishing you good reading. Until next week.
Is he like a mainstay?
No,
they just call him like, oh, you're the dude. You're the comic book expert today. Ho hum.
Look at this picture of me with a baby.
Or we could podcast.